Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Tuesday, and that means it's time for Tuesday Taoism. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your life and your reality through mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to take a moment and request that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope you'll consider sharing it with others. That's a wonderful way to support the podcast. Now, we do have a couple series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism, we have our Zen stream on Sundays, and then I do try to throw in an extra episode when I can every week usually. On a related topic, something usually having to do with mental health, that is my background. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years. So you'll hear things related to, you know, mental health issues, relationships, meditation, mindfulness, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live an overall happier day-to-day life. So today being Tuesday, we are doing Tuesday Taoism. And again, for those of you who are here for the first time, Taoism is a philosophy, really, based on a book written 2,500 years ago, give or take a few hundred years. It was written in ancient China. It's a book called the Tao Te Ching. And it's a book just of some amazing wisdom. It's got to be, in my opinion, in the realm of philosophy, spiritual books, it's my number one, like my top five. I did a top five books that had a major impact on me. I did an episode based on that probably about a year and a half ago, more or less. You could find it in the history, I'm sure, here on the podcast. And this, I believe, was number one. So it definitely is up there for me. Discovered it as a teenager, and I have returned to it every so often. And every time I do, I just get wonderful, wonderful insight out of it. And I decided one day, I said, you know what? I'm going to make a series out of this because the Tao Te Ching has 81 very short chapters. So what we have been doing is reading one chapter every Tuesday, and then I discuss it a little bit and just offer, you know, my thoughts, my interpretations on it. Keep in mind, I say every week, this book has been translated hundreds, if not thousands of times. Of course, it was written originally in ancient Chinese, and it is translated very differently depending on the author. And I mean, even if you pick up two English translations by different authors, you can get very, very different meanings out of the chapters, which in and of itself is a pretty interesting fact. So, you know, I like to put that out there because if you hear me read this and then you pick up another English copy by a different author and you're like, this is nothing like what he's been talking about, you know why. This particular translation I'm reading is by a gentleman named Stephen Mitchell, and I've read several translations, and this has always been the one that I come back to, the one that I really like. So I'm going to go ahead and get into this. This is chapter 68, Tao Te Ching, translated by Stephen Mitchell. The best athlete wants his opponent at his best. The best general enters the mind of his enemy. The best businessman serves the communal good. The best leader follows the will of the people. All of them embody the virtue of non-competition. Not that they don't love to compete, but they do it in the spirit of play. In this, they are like children and in harmony with the Tao. And that's the end of the chapter right there. Sorry about the little slip up there in the middle of it. Interestingly, this copy that I'm reading, which is posted online, it has a typo. And that's actually what tripped me up. Not to point the finger, but It has a typo here, and that's what kind of messed it up. But anyway, I think the message comes across pretty clear, but there are some things to dive into here that just jump right out at me. So I'm actually going to start here at the end. And the last line, of course, is in harmony with the Tao. He says here, and by the way, there's lots of debates over who actually wrote this text. The most popular belief is that it's written by a single man, hermit, Lao Tzu, you know, back when he was a hermit in I believe he was a bookkeeper, some kind of a bookkeeper or a record keeper for a popular, you know, like a wealthy family or some kind of a kingdom, something like that. I'm piecing this together from things that I've read here and there from my memory. So I could be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure it's something like that. Others have said that historically we do not know for sure that it was written by one person. Could have been a collection of people that put together, you know, this philosophical, you know, work. So, you know, again, up for debate. But anyway, he says here, he, in this they are like children and in harmony with the Tao. So again, as we have seen repeated throughout multiple weeks, he makes reference to this idea of alignment. Here he uses the word harmony, alignment, harmony, you know, being one with, and he uses this term, the Tao. And I, like I've said here before, the Tao has no direct translation in English. The closest is the way. But truly, when we talk about the Tao, it's one of those things, much like I often say when I'm talking about Zen on Zen Stream on Sundays, that you cannot really describe Zen or the Tao using words, using language, because just inherently language is built on concepts, conceptual, you know, perception. Every word is a little auditory representation of a mental concept. So if I say the word tree, right? We all know what a tree is, right? We have a mental image of what a tree is. All language is that way. So even when you try to refer to things that are not visible, like nothingness, right? The mind can't help but create a sort of image of what nothingness might look like. So maybe you picture a vacuum or an empty room or something like that. Our language is limited in that it cannot describe things very well that are truly non-conceptual. And this is, of course, where we run into, you know, little obstacles, snafus, whatever you want to call it. When we try to talk about stuff like the Tao, like Zen, like God, is another good example, is that they cannot be conceptualized by our mind, right? Our small ego, rational thinking mind cannot possibly fathom the true nature of God, for example, right? But interestingly, we do have the capacity, I believe, my personal belief, to feel it, right? We can't really conceptualize it. We can't describe it to someone, but we can align with it. We can feel more connected to it, right? And of course, we can use language to try to help one another to come closer to this feeling. But ultimately, words and concepts are not the thing itself that we want to align with, right? And I hope that's coming across clearly, but he says here in this line, in this, they are like children and in harmony with the Tao, aligned with the Tao. So when he says in this, they are like children, what is this? What is he talking about? Well, he's talking, as the earlier lines in this chapter say, is that the best athlete wants his opponent at his best. The best general enters the mind of his enemy. The best businessman serves the communal good. The best leader follows the will of the people. And the very next line is, which had the typo, all of them embody the virtue of non-competition. Now, this is probably my favorite thing in this whole chapter. And it is, if you, from a certain perspective, It has an incredibly important message that really reverberates throughout the whole Tao Te Ching, throughout the whole book. And it has a strong application to how we should approach our own way of living and our own actions as we try to move toward goals. And I'm going to share with you what that message is. Just let me pause here for a quick second, allow a word from a sponsor, and I will be right back. All right, thank you for your patience. I am back. Let me take a quick moment here, just remind you that if you ever want to reach out to me to ask a question, express a concern, make a suggestion, or if you have an idea for a future podcast episode, you can always email me at elucidatethereal@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can hop on over to the YouTube channel, same name, Dreams Warp. Find any one of the videos, doesn't matter which one. Post a comment under it. Say, hey, I just heard your podcast. Had a common question, concern, or suggestion. I get notified right away and I can respond to you there in the comment section of the YouTube video. Also, I am on Twitter, so you can send me a direct message there and follow me while you're at it. I do post things there that I think serve as, you know, nice reminders, nudges throughout the day to focus on your breath, focus on the present moment, focus on your practice. So follow me there to get that good stuff as well. You also find me under Dreams Warp. I believe it's all one word there on Twitter. And last thing I'd like to say is that if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you are enjoying the content, I hope you could take a quick moment, leave a nice rating and review. That really helps out the podcast and I would really appreciate it. Okay, so all that being said, chapter 68 we are on, and we are talking about these two very important lines. And like I said just before the break, this from a certain angle is extremely important and delivers a very important message. He says here, all of them embody the virtue of non-competition. Not that they don't love to compete, but they do it in the spirit of play. Why is this so important? I'm going to tell you exactly why. There are many areas in this book, and not only in this book, I think a lot of spiritual teachings out there tend to, I may be overgeneralizing here a little bit, okay? But they tend to kind of fall into one of two camps. You have the, you know, for example, the ones where that are all about, you don't just sit, meditate, you know, let go of all desires, you know, don't engage into this material world, you know, just let it all go. It's all illusory, you know, just sit, meditate. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to accomplish anything. You're already full as you are, you know, all that stuff. And then you have kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, this type of describing factor that I'm talking about. The other end of the spectrum is all about goal setting, taking action, getting busy, a lot of effort, you know, push yourself, work. You have to excel. You have to, you know, develop yourself. You have to keep learning. You have to keep striving. You have to keep, you know, stay motivated, you know, stay hungry, keep going. And you have these two kind of, and they appear to be at odds. And one of the things that just I love about the Tao Te Ching and about Taoism in general, and to some extent Zen too, is that it kind of tends to take these two seeming opposites and it brings them together in a very, very powerful way. And in Tao Te Ching, Taoism, I should say, they have a direct term for it, which is Wu Wei, which I've talked about here a couple times. Spelled WU WEI, and you could Google that if you want to read more about that. It's fascinating. And again, it's one of those concepts that we don't really have sort of direct English translation for, but what it basically means is action and non-action, okay? And like he says here, and let me just read this again, the virtue of non-competition, not that they don't love to compete, right? So how is that possible? Virtue, they hold the virtue of non-competition, but they love to compete. And right there, we see that apparent paradox where he's saying, they value the idea or the virtue, as he says, of not competing, but they love to compete. Now, this is where we run again into something that I've mentioned a couple times, that a lot of times when we look at concepts like Wu Wei, action, non-action, letting go versus taking action, you know, working really hard versus, you know, just meditating, doing nothing. Even when you look at things like law of attraction, right, where they talk so much about, well, you know, should you take a lot of action or should you just visualize, right? Again, you see this split. And one of the things I love about Taoism, Tao Te Ching here, is that a lot of the things where he says he discusses non-action, or he discusses as you align with the Tao, the Tao is more an energy of yielding, of surrender, of letting go. And what's interesting is that he, in my opinion, there's a split between the internal attitude, the internal energy, the internal I guess, for lack of a better word, it's like the thinking, emotional, behavioral, like the more thinking, emotional, the thinking, emotional energy within us, okay, versus how we apply that kind of energy into the actions that we take. So, for example, if I'm feeling, let's say I'm doing a ton of affirmations, visualization, and I'm meditating a whole lot, and I'm feeling really, really, really centered, I'm feeling very aligned, I'm feeling very calm, I'm feeling very, you know, just centered, just feeling very connected, okay? Very high, I guess high vibration would be a good terminology for it, right? Then the theory here with Wu Wei and with action, the merging of action and non-action, is that when I am that centered, right, then all actions that I take feel like non-action because they arise spontaneously without me having to force, without me having to think, without me having to debate, without me having to, you know, oh, should I do it this way? Should I do it that way? Well, what if I fail? Well, what if I don't do it right? What if there's, it just automatically, it's almost like inspired action, okay, is a good way to put it. And so we see what the reason that I feel these lines are so important is because the first time that I've read, at least, where he makes it so explicit, he's basically saying that the person holds the virtue, meaning the inner, right, the inner thinking, feeling pattern of non-competition, but they love to compete, which is the external part, right? That's like they actually love, it's almost as if you take somebody who's like amazing at sports, right? They just love, let's say, I don't know, basketball player, love basketball, just love playing basketball. To them, it's like they just lose themselves in the game, right? Then they may be very competitive, right? But in the art of the game, they're not worried about competing. They are just so lost in the movement. They're so lost in the inspired action of the game itself that it doesn't feel like they're competing, but they love the competition within the game. And this is another great example of how language is always a limit, right? Because when we talk about these things, again, they seem paradoxical. They seem like they don't go together. Well, how could I be competitive and not be competitive? That doesn't make sense. Well, it actually kind of does, right? When you look at it from a certain perspective. And that's what I think is so important about these two lines when I read them here, is he's actually drawing a little bit of a distinction between the actions that we take, okay, and the energy we put into those actions. So if we're looking to succeed at something, for example, but we're constantly worried internally about failure, about not being good enough, about, oh, well, what if I don't do it right? Or you become so obsessed with succeeding that the whatever it is you're trying to succeed at ceases to be fun. It ceases to be inspiring. It ceases to be motivating. Now you're just doing it out of fear, out of desperation, out of anxiety, out of worry. Then you've slipped into, then no matter, you could say no matter how many actions you take, you're more than likely you're just going to burn yourself out. Whereas if you're doing something because you love doing it, and whether you succeed, you fail, you just enjoy doing it, you're going to continue doing it no matter what, and that's the kind of energy you're putting into it, then the actions may be exactly the same, but the inner energy with which you take those actions is 100% different. And that inner energy is what I feel is that's the target when we talk about those types of practices that are about letting go, about meditating, about visualizing, about affirmations, about non-action, about yielding, about surrender, about those are the types, that's the type of qualities that we want to maintain in our inner energy, in our inner selves, in our thoughts, in our feelings, right? And I would add to that inspiration, right? Feeling connected, feeling high vibration, feeling happy, feeling joyous, feeling grateful. That's inner stuff, right? But when it comes to how we take action, you can still be driven. You can still push yourself. You can still put a lot of effort. You can still, you know, take tons of action. You can still work on yourself. You can still continue learning. You could continue to do all those things and do it much more effectively when your inner world is, as I described just a little bit ago, at peace, connected, high vibration. And that is an interesting, I think, split to make. Again, it only serves, the split ultimately is illusory, right? Because the inner world and the outer world are one and the same. But for purposes of, again, using language as we do to develop, to learn, to use it as tools to speak to one another and to help one another, we use these languages and this language and these terms to get ideas across. So I'm hope that as I'm sharing these words with you, it's becoming clear what it is that I'm talking about and what I believe he's pointing out in these two lines. So they're able to hold the inner state, which he says virtue, of non-competition. And then the very next line is, not that they don't love to compete, right? But, in the very next line, but they do it in the spirit of play. That is wonderful. So I think it's a really nice chapter. I hope that it was helpful to you today in your practice. Stay tuned. I'll be back later this week with another episode. I really want to thank you for listening and have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.